The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So as some of you know that I gave a talk on action on Sunday. And I've been thinking more about the role of action in practice. And so I would like to not so much exactly give a talk, though maybe it'll feel like that, but rather try to think something out almost with you as I've been reflecting on the practicing with action and the experience I've had with activity, action as part of practice over these years. And so what I'm coming to appreciate or maybe understand is that the role of action, of activity in practice is underappreciated. The centrality of it, the importance of it, but in a different way than maybe I talked about on Sunday. So I think that in our general, maybe very wide, ambiguous Buddhist scene, beyond IMC even, that there's a tendency for many people to orient their life and their practice around the experiences they're having, around the impact that the world has on them, or the impact that their inner life has. To go along with that is sometimes how we feel is important, what we're feeling. Like, oh, I'm feeling really good, it's really great that my practice is going well because I feel good. I'm feeling really bad, you know, I need to do practice because I'm feeling bad, and practice is how it helps me feel good. And so feeling somehow is important. In this kind of way of approach, the kind of default, maybe not consciously, is that who we are is an experiencer. We're the ones experiencing things. In the extreme form of it, we're the victim of life. Or we're the beneficiary of what goes on around us. And so practice then is oriented around, I'm the beneficiary, I'm the victim. Things are being done to me. I have to deal with it. I have to find a way to be with it. I have this difficult inner life. It makes me feel kind of awful. And I have to find a way to be with it and feel better about it. I have to learn how to feel better about myself. And one way or the other, this is one kind of a very generally kind of an approach that many of us have, and this common orientation. And I don't want to say that that's wrong at all. It's a medium through which people are finding their way and practicing. But it also maybe is narrow. It's not very. It's also kind of nearsighted maybe. It doesn't include as much of what's possible in the spiritual life that. That would actually free us up from some of the. That might free us up from some of the narrowness of it all. Or sometimes it's when we're the experiencer, we're the victim, we're the beneficiary. It's about our feelings, how things are affecting me, my opinions of it all. It's a little bit of a labyrinth that you can never get out of. So, is there another way? Is another thing? And one way to do that, one other thing, is to appreciate or understand that maybe it doesn't matter too much what we're feeling, what the experience is. The center of gravity, what matters, is how we act in response to that. What comes out of us in response of it. And rather than being the experiencer of it all, we're the creator of it. We're the source for something to emerge that's inspiring, that's meaningful. And so rather than the being the experiencer, we're the emerger. We're the one that emerges something, that gives birth to something. Maybe we're the midwife for something to be born within us and come out. So, for example, just a little while ago, I saw that there was a police car parked across the street, down the street a little bit, and someone doing something with the car. I couldn't tell at all what was going on. But I go, maybe, for example, I go out there and the police car is like pressed up against my car and I can't get out, and they're dealing with this person who's distressed in their car. And I said, oh no, Gil has important things to do, and this is a drag, and how could these people be in my way? And I can't really complain because the police officer, and you can't be angry at police officer without getting some bad thing happen. This is a drag, and my life by day is being ruined, and this doesn't feel good to me, but it even feels less that I feel trapped. It's even worse, you know, it's like, oh, no, 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 right? This is like a labyrinth, right? I'll never come out of. Or I think of myself, I'm not the experience. I don't define myself by the experience I'm having. If anything, I define myself by my response. What do I want to have emerge? What do I want to give birth to here that's inspiring, that's meaningful? If anything, that's what's important. Well, the person in the other car is distressed. The police officer is on the phone. Let me go over and say hello and see, what can I do for you? Or can I, you need anything? And I have extra water in my car. Would you like some water? Or, I don't know, something like that. What's the response? So no matter how difficult an experience is or how pleasant an experience is, we don't define ourselves by the experience. We don't put the experience at the center. The center is the response to the situation. How do I respond to this? What's the response to this situation? Rather than, oh, how do I feel about it? Oh, I feel lousy. And then people say, and people ask you, how do you feel about that? Oh. And then that's what's prioritized. Even, right? I mean, it was amazing to watch my kid go to kindergarten and see the teachers ask questions of the kids. I said, wow. They're shaping the kids as a, you know, they're making the kids a certain kind of self, that self is important. And like they come to school, everyone, come to school tomorrow and talk about your favorite this, that, your favorite thing. Or something, all these things about self that got reinforced. They didn't have to do that, but they were reinforcing self and self-importance in kindergarten. But what about come saying, why don't you come to school tomorrow and see what you'd like to do for the class? As opposed to, come to school tomorrow and tell us what your favorite ice cream is. So how do we? So no matter what we're experiencing, the experience is the experience. Given that, what do we want to give birth to inside of ourselves? What do we want to? How do we want to respond to it? And if we need to have a self, maybe we're the responder, not the experiencer. We're the one who kind of has an ability to choose what to do given this. And the shift from being the experiencer to the responder means that we're not necessarily weighed down by the experience. We're not measuring ourselves by how we're feeling, but we're measuring ourselves by the freedom by which we can act in the world and respond. And a lot of the freedom that Buddhism is trying to point us to is to live a life where we're free to do what is wise to do. not free to be peaceful. That's nice. It's certainly great to be peaceful. but we don't want to be held back or limited from being able to feel like we can step into the world appropriately, wonderfully. And so if we might have some, it's possible that we, some of us occasionally have a little bit of neurosis, maybe, just a teeny bit, occasionally, accidentally maybe. And so one of those accidental little neuroses is coming up, you know, and it limits you, it holds you back, you're held back, it makes a complicated situation. Because you believe in that experience. You think, oh, it's me, I'm not supposed to be this way, I'm supposed to be, there must be some other way, and this is unfortunate, and how am I going to solve this? As opposed to, yeah, I have this neurosis, this issue, but I've learned, I don't have to let it limit me. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to stop doing what needs to be done. It doesn't have to be healed or fixed if the emerger, the person who acts, can do all the appropriate things, live a full life, do the things that they want to do in their life, and not held back by it. And then the neurosis accompanies us, but there's still freedom in relationship to it. So to focus, to shift the attention from the being the experiencer and their feelings and all that to how we respond. It's maybe not always the right approach, but maybe it's more often a good approach than people realize. And so when I was, you know, in Zen training had a lot to do with this. In Zen training, I came to the Zen monastery, and we did a lot of like sweeping and raking and stuff like that every day. And I wasn't really into it. You know, I was here to meditate, the real work, the real practice, you know, sweeping. Can you believe sweeping and raking? And so, you know, so I would kind of like rake like this. You know, like, you know, okay, I guess I have to do it. Okay? Something like that. And then they would come over to me and say, Gil, when you rake, you both hands are involved and you just really do the raking. You just become the raking. And, you know, and if I was clean, there was a lot in Japan, there was a lot of cleaning the temple with cloth, you know, and you clean the hallways, you get down on your kind of, you know, bend over like an animal on four, and you push that cloth as fast as you can down the hallway, and you know, whatever you're doing, like when you're carrying the rice from the kitchen to the dining room, I was just holding it like this. It was easy to do, one hand. You hold it like this. You're completely into the activity of this is what you're doing. It's the action you're doing. You become the action. You are the action. And so over and over again in Zen, it was, you know, you really give yourself to the action you're doing. And that was a big lesson for me because I kind of did things half-heartedly. But what happens when you do that, when you do the activity that is, then you're not limited by what you're experiencing, how you're feeling, and what you're believing, and your ideas of who I am, me, myself, and mine, and just actually freeing from that. It can be overdone, and that's what I saw in Zen monasteries, where people would do that kind of activity, just fully being there, but they didn't have mindfulness of how they were feeling, actually, sometimes. So they could be angry, but they didn't even know it. Their emotions and all that. So I think what we teach here in terms of being all this awareness of ourselves and what's going on is actually very important. It's a time and place for all these things. But I suspect that in the way that I've taught here and the way that this Vipassana teaching teaches is taught, we haven't given the message about the role of action and the possibility of how in the doing there's a freeing. In the doing there's a shift of identity. In the doing there is an emergence of something that can be nourishing and healthy and healing. It's kind of like medicine for ourselves. That is not going to emerge, come, if we sit in meditation waiting for something to happen, trying to make something happen. I love meditation. It's powerful medicine in itself, so I don't want to diminish its importance. But this way of trying to think today, think out loud, so you don't take me too seriously, that I wonder about action, activity. So those are my thoughts for today. And maybe they're provocative for you to reflect on or experiment with and see what you can learn from that. So,